Now let's take our Bibles, please, and turn to the book of Genesis, and we are in chapter number 31. We're going to try to make it through the first 24 verses, and we will more or less begin at the first verse, but I want you to see one thing before we go back to the beginning. I want you to look in verse number 12, and I want you to see three words. This is the Lord God Himself speaking. And I want you to see these three words almost at the end of the verse where he says, I have seen. I have seen. Jacob didn't know it. Jacob was unaware. But God's eye was on Jacob. His hand was upholding Jacob. And God's providence was overseeing for Jacob. If it was so for Jacob, it is so for us. Now I want you to go back with me to the beginning of this chapter. We actually stopped the last time in the middle of chapter 30, and we're going to skip over the last part of chapter 30, and I would encourage you not right now. Don't start reading. Please don't start reading the 30th chapter. Read that when you get home. Try to pay attention to what we're talking about. But in that passage, it is a passage, that whole 30th chapter, reveals our Lord Jesus Christ to be the great sovereign. The chapter opens up with the first spiritual insight that we have some understanding about Jacob and him having, because there is a conflict between Jacob and Rachel, his wife, husband and wife. Hard to believe that husbands ever disagree, but they had a disagreement. And his statement to her, or is actually in a form of a question, be like a rhetorical question, he said, am I in God's stead? And of course, he knows that he's not. She knows that he's not. And what he is telling her is that God is the sovereign. Well, the rest of this chapter is about the sovereignty of God. The conflict between Jacob and his uncle Laban has intensified. And so Jacob makes a negotiating suggestion to Laban. He said to him, you keep the purebred cattle, the blue ribbon cattle, and I'll keep the off-breeds. I'll take all the culls, all the throwaways. I'll do that for both the camels and the sheep. And he promised, I will not be a thief. I will not rustle any cattle. And if any of your cattle end up among my cattle, you can count it as if I've stolen them. So yours are going to be a single color, which are the best of the cattle. And I'll take all those that are striped and speckled. So, of course, Laban can hardly believe his eyes and his ears. And so what could he say but I accept? He thought his riches were about to explode. They've grown immensely under Jacob. But now then, he thinks they're just about to really take off. After all, he has the most desirable, the most valuable, the most beautiful, and the most plentiful of it. And on top of that, Jacob promised him, I'll do all the work. I'll take care of them. I'll remove those sheep as far as a 3 days walk. This would not be for a man, but for the animals. I'll 3 days walk from each other, so they'll be totally separated. So that's what they did. He agreed upon it, and they separated them. And so the speckled and spotted went one way, and the solid ones went another way. At the end of that chapter, we learn that not only does he have cattle, but he also has sheep, and he's added to that number some camels. And so I think we're going to find out what those camels are about. And when I read that he has camels, I'm wondering what Uncle Laban is thinking. Why would he have camels? Because camels are for a trip. So why would he want camels? But maybe he doesn't know it, because he doesn't appear that he's going over to check on Jacob and his family at all. But Jacob is getting ready for a trip. And think of it now. With 4 different moms, Jacob now has 13 children. He has his hands full, and it's quite a family that he's put together. And he's going to have to take care of this family. This isn't what God had ordered or what God had approved of, but nevertheless, he said that he's going to bless Jacob, and that's exactly what he's going to do. So in chapter 31, which is our text, it is a chapter of 55 verses. It's too many to get through in one time, so we'll try to get through the first half. Now let me back up and remind you where we are before we start. In chapter 28, what we learn is that Christ is the ladder between heaven and earth. So He is the only way between heaven and earth. That's what that ladder represents. It begins at the earth, where He became a man, but He is standing at the head of the ladder. It's where you see Him. He is the only way between God and man. We also learn in that chapter that He is the dreadful place. By the dreadful place, He means He is the awesome place and the only place of worship. Therefore, He is the only mediator between God and man, and only in Him is there true worship. And then in the 29th chapter, at the end of that chapter, He is revealed to be the Lion of the tribe of Judah. So we come to the last book of the Bible. There you have the clear revelation of who He is. And then in chapter 30, as I said to you, Christ is revealed to be the sovereign. So He is the ladder, the dreadful place, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, and He is the sovereign. So what is the truth that we're going to find in chapter 31? Well, in chapter 31, Christ is revealed to be the protector of His people. Here is the basic truth that is taught to us in this 31st chapter. Laban typifies the law. And over again, he's laying the law upon Jacob, and Jacob has no way to escape it. Jacob represents, you could say, God's grace, but more than that, he represents God's elect people. So what you see in chapter 31 is the deliverance and the redemption of God's elect from beneath the law. So when you're going through chapter 31, we're going to see that in this chapter, God is redeeming His people. So now let's see in chapter 31, the protector of His people. Let's read verse 1 and 2. Chapter 31, and he heard the words of Laban's sons, that is Jacob, heard the words of Laban's, his uncle's sons, or that would be his cousins, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and that which was our father's hath he gotten all of this glory. So he's gotten all of his possessions and all of his glory, so the way they see it. And then in verse 2, Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. So what we can see is that there's been a change on the part of Laban and the part of his sons. So 20 years have passed since he first arrived, correct? So you have the 7 years and the 7 years and then 6 years through the period of the time having to do with these cattle and these sheep have passed while he's building up some wealth. And so at the end of that time, now these 20 years have passed, and so there's jealousy that is here, and there is bitterness that is taking place. And so look what happens then when you look on to verse number 3. And the Lord said unto Jacob, Return unto the land of thy fathers and thy kindred, and I will be with thee. And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock. So these 20 years have passed. He's been building his wealth. He's become a man of greater wealth, it appears, than even Uncle Laban. And so the disposition of Uncle Laban has changed, and his cousins have turned against him. And as always, God has an answer, and He has an answer that is right on time. And so He tells him, I want you to return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred. Now, He had told him that before, back in chapter 28, He had told him already, so this has been said to him. But I want you to focus on the last phrase, verse number 3, will be with thee. In chapter 28, He had told him that before. So while he's on his way to Uncle Laban's, in verse number 15, we read it a few moments ago, I am with thee, I will keep thee in all places where you go, and I will bring you again to this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken unto thee. So he makes this wonderful promise to Jacob, I will be with thee. He had made a promise like that to Moses when Moses complained, saying that he wasn't up to the task of leading the Israelites to face the Egyptians. And God said, Now therefore go, And I will be with thy mouth, and I will teach you what you ought to say. He made a similar promise to Joshua in the first chapter in verse number 9. Have not I commanded thee, be strong and of good courage, be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. We could go on with the promises that God has made in the Scriptures to all of His people. But I say to you that if you are His, if you are a mom at home or you are a husband at work, as He said to Jacob, He speaks to us, I will be with thee. So what a wonderful promise He makes to Jacob. Now verse number 4. And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field and to his flock. Now you wonder, why would he call them to come to him? Well, there's something very important that he wants them to hear and wants to discuss with them. He doesn't want to take a risking chance that one of his cousins is going to hear what he might say. And so he calls them out to the field where he knows that there'll be nobody able to hear them. All of those sheep around making their noises and the cattle making their noises, there's no way for anybody to hear them. So he calls them and he said to them in verse number 5, I see your father's countenance, that it is not toward me as before. But the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my power I have served your father. And your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. God suffered him not to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckle shall be thy wages, then all the cattle bear speckled. And if he said thus, the ring straight shall be thy hire, then bear all the cattle ring straight. Thus God hath taken away the cattle of your father and has given them unto me. What a statement. So all that you read back in that 30th chapter, you read there about him taking some limbs and tearing off the bark, that really had nothing to do with it. It all had to do with what God was doing for Jacob, and he understands that now, that God has not allowed him to hurt me. When he says to him that he's changed my wages 10 times, 10 is the number of completeness. 5 is complete, 5 is 5 more, 10, double completeness. In double completeness, no telling how many times that Uncle Laban has changed his wages, but it didn't make any difference what Uncle Laban did, because God suffered Uncle Laban, he said, not to hurt me. So Jacob laid his case before Rachel and before Leah. He stressed, I have tirelessly worked. I've worked when it was cold and when it was windy. I've worked in the night and I've worked without sleep. And Uncle Laban has been deceitful at every turn. Nevertheless, God in his sovereignty and God in his providence has taken care of me. So that's the answer to the breeding of the cattle, that God has taken care of him. So let's go on to verse number 10 and 11. It came to pass at that time that the cattle conceived, that I lifted up mine eyes, and I saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the cattle were ringstrake, speckled, and grizzled. So not the best ones. And the angel of God spake unto me in a dream, in verse 11, saying, Jacob. And I said, Here am I. And he said, Lift up now thine eyes, and see all the rams which leap upon the cattle are ringstrake, speckled, and grizzled. So here you have all of these unwanted cattle. But here's what God said. For I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, where you made a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out from this land, and return into the land of thy kindred. The Scriptures are filled with God reminding His people of their history and of His continual presence. And God took him back to the experience at Bethel. Do you remember what Bethel means? El is the name for God, Elohim, and Beth is the house, is the name for house, so it is the house of God. It was the house of God because that's where he met him. That is the house of God because that's the dreadful place of worship. God has a greater purpose than all that we have been able to see for Jacob. God is looking past Jacob, actually, to the 12 sons. Out of those 12 sons, men very much unworthy, he is going to make a nation. He doesn't want them to be brought up in this idolatrous home. He doesn't want them to be around the ruthless actions of Laban. No, they must depart. Again, we are forced to see that God's elect are called to come out from false religion and from its practice. It's not worthy and not right, certainly not biblical, for a man to say, I believe the gospel, and yet to be among false worship and say that he is a true worshiper. Those two things do not mix. All the way through the Bible, they are separated. Jehovah pointed him to his homeland and to his kindred. I am the God. I am the Jehovah of Bethel. I want you to know that. Now let's press on to verse number 14. And Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, Is there yet any portion or any inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not counted of him strangers? For he hath sold us, and hath quite devoured also our money. For all the riches which God hath taken from our father, that is ours and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God hath said unto thee, do. You cannot help but to hurt for Rachel and for Leah. You go back and you look in the 28th chapter, the 29th chapter, and you see the great pain that Rachel would have gone through and that Leah would have gone through. And here they are, and they say that their dad has treated them as a stranger. Whatever they mean exactly by that, it means that they're not being treated as a member of the family. They're not being treated in a warm way. What a terrible thing that in families, you have families that do not treat one another with kinship and warmth, but as strangers. I can say to you that in our home, I never felt that I was being treated as a stranger. My mom and my dad were warm and kind and gentle. My dad was the strict hand. My mom was more of the loving kind hand. But between the two of them, there was that warm feeling. And Connie and I tried to pass that on to our sons. We hope that we did that very thing. We would never want them to feel as strangers. So parents, it's a lesson for us. We don't want to ever give over that kind of feeling to us. But you can also see something of the teaching of Laban that has rubbed off on his two daughters. Because what does it appear that they're concerned with? They're concerned with money. They're concerned with inheritance. They're concerned with things. Just like Uncle Laban, they're concerned with their portion and their inheritance. And the last word in verse 15 is money. So that's their great concern. So no doubt there's a lot of weakness, a lot of pain, a lot of baggage in the lives of these two girls. Nevertheless, you also see their submission to follow him and their willingness to do what the God of Jacob says at the end of verse number 16. Now then, or so be it, so like in summation, all right, we've had our say. Whatsoever God has said unto you, Jacob, we're going to follow you, and that you ought to do. So that's a little bit of what is happening here, and now there's just about to be the departure. So I want you to think about the departure that is here. Think of it early in the morning, that Jacob on a certain day, I don't think it would be the next day, but a certain day, maybe a week later, 2 weeks later, at a certain point, he tells them what they're going to do. There had to be a lot of trust also between Jacob and his servants. And so they get the camels ready, and they get the donkeys ready, and they get the sheep ready, and the cattle ready, and they have water, and they have grain, and they have their walking shoes on, and they're all ready. So early, early in the morning, I can picture it being maybe just after midnight, maybe 2 o'clock in the morning, they're up and they start to walk. And they begin to leave. So they're trudging out. You can imagine all of these cattle and all of this family. Fortunately, has his sons to help him by this time, and they're going along and they're leaving. So they're leaving their granddad. Not a word has been said to them. So we pick up in verse number 17. And Jacob rose up and sent his sons and his wives upon camels. And he carried away all of his cattle and all of his goods which he had gotten, the cattle of his getting which he had gotten in Padan Aram, for to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. So you can see that he must know that his mother has passed, because she's not mentioned. And then he's going to go to see Isaac. So he's hoping to see his father Isaac down in the land of Canaan. And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the image which were her father's. Now actually 3 days have passed before Laban knows this. So they've been gone now for a full 3 days before Laban even knows it. But Laban doesn't appear to be exactly an industrious man, but he gets up probably not to shear the sheep himself, but to oversee it. And when he gets there, he finds that Jacob and his family is gone. And he also then goes to look. He wouldn't have just known this without looking. He finds that some of the images have been stolen. Now, we're told that Rachel did it, but Laban didn't know it, and Jacob didn't know it. So that's verse number 19. Now look at 20. And Jacob stole away unawares to Laban the Syrian. I like it that he calls Laban the Syrian, because he is a man who has the ways of a Syrian. He has the ways of those of the Middle East. He is not one who is one of God's elect. He shows no indication of that at all. He is Laban the Syrian, whereas Jacob is the grandson of Abraham, and he is the son of Isaac. And so here is Laban the Syrian, and that he told him not that he fled. So he fled with all that he had, and he rose up, and he passed over the river, and he set his face toward the Mount of Gilead. And so here he's headed south. And you can you blame anybody for wanting to head south? And so that's where he is. He's trying to get away. He's wanting to head south. So here he is going down to Mount Gilead. And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob had fled. And he took his brethren with him, and he pursued after him 7 days' journey. And they overtook him at Mount Gilead. Now I want you to think about what is here. He's heard about his departure. But in that departure, there are no hugs, no kisses, no party. There's no warm regrets of we'll come to see you, or we'll meet in the middle. We'll get together maybe about Thanksgiving. We'll have Thanksgiving somewhere in the middle on the way. Nothing like that. He simply left home, and has done it in secret. And remember that he had left his home before in secret. You recall that? He also fled away when he was in secret. And isn't it interesting that when he left, he thought he could get away from God. But when Rachel left, she thought that she could take her gods with her by just putting her gods into a box. And so here's the truth of that, of course. In Psalm 139, in verse 7 and 8, the psalmist said, "Whither shall I go from thy spirit? Or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in Sheol," or in hell, "behold, thou art there." So Philip, when you're flying those jets up in the sky from one spot to another, you should always know that God is with you. God knows where you are. And for those of us who have our feet planted up on earth and we're going about our business, whatever it is, whether we're at home or at work or driving, talking, laughing, or crying, we should know that God is with us. And so that's what he learns. There is no way to get away from God. Rachel has stolen the images that were her father's. These were images of idolatry. She thought she could take her gods with her by taking those images. What a primitive and heathen idea. She didn't appear to mind Jacob embracing the Lord God Jehovah, but neither did she reject the false gods of her falsehood, of her childhood. She has never departed. She has never repented. She has never come to this God of grace. And so Jacob and his caravan are off, and they're heading back toward their homeland. But here is Laban, fleeing from Haran, and he's coming down to find them. But God intervenes, and I want you to see this very last verse, 24. God came to Laban, the Syrian. So God can speak to the son of Abraham, he can speak to the son of Isaac, or he can speak to a Syrian if he pleases. And he spoke to this Gentile Syrian in the dream by night, and he said unto him, "Take heed, I warn you, that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad." This occurred while Laban traveled down to see Jacob, and he is forbidden to speak to Jacob about returning or about any other shaky deal or to threaten him in any way. He must know that God is in control, God is in charge of all things. And that is the story of this chapter. Let me conclude with giving you a few verses that speak to us about God's care for His people. In Psalm 121 and verse 3, the Lord said, "He shall not suffer thy foot to be moved, and he that keeps thee will not slumber." There will not be one second where God is asleep on the job to take care of His people. What did the psalmist say in Psalm 23 and verse 1? "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." A good translation of that, "No need shall I know." Why is that? Because the Lord is my shepherd. And Psalm 34 in verse 15, it says, "The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and His ears are open to their cry." So God hears our cry. His eyes are upon His justified ones. And in Hebrews 13 and verse 5, "I will never leave thee. I will never forsake thee." Peter was a warm-hearted man, and he said in 1 Peter 3 and 12, "For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, the justified ones, and His ears are open to their prayers." And then he also said in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 7, he's exhorting the Lord's people, "Cast all of your cares upon Him, for He cares for you." Not only did Christ earn righteousness, not only did God impute that righteousness, and did God declare His people justified at the cross, but He takes care of us as we walk along the course of this life.